Hello, and welcome to our series, Career Resilience, where we talk with people about their career path and their career journey, and maybe we can all learn from each other. My name is Jan Daniluk, and I'm a human resources professional in London, Ontario, Canada. I work with Ford Keast LLP, and I work with my clients to help them with the HR side of their business. We hope that you will enjoy these discussions with real people about real challenges and real working life situations. Welcome. My guest today is Alec Cook. Alec, welcome to Career Resilience.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I really do appreciate this, and to have the opportunity to chat with you is great. So we're going to be talking about a couple of things. I will talk about being a student and what that's like. And also we'll talk about your job. And we're going to talk about the fact that you're a transgender male. And that means that you identified at birth as a female, but you came to realize that you were actually a male.
Yeah.
Or as you say, a dude. Let's start by talking about the fact that you're a student. Where are you going to school?
So I just finished my third year at Western. I'm doing my honors in psychology.
So you decided to go into psychology. What made you pick that course?
To be honest, when I was like finishing up high school, so finishing up grade 12, I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I always really liked science. I loved biology and chemistry in high school. But I also liked the humanities. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was on a youth mental health and addictions council here in London, which was a council that brought together youth with lived experience of mental health and who wanted to make a difference in the community. And so I was working with a lot of different people who work in mental health, social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists. And I like really got involved in that and thought, maybe this like psychology might be for me. So I applied and that's what I ended up doing.
Okay. And what was it like for you to be a student? You go to Western.
Yes.
What was it like for you to be a student at Western?
Western's a pretty big school. So it was like, very different from coming from like a smaller school. Mm-hmm. And going to Western, I grew up in London. So like I already knew the community, but I feel like Western's like, there's just so many people from like all over the world. So it was like a big experience for me, but it's a great opportunity to meet new people and experience different like perspectives about the world. So I enjoy Western. I think it's a good school.
Yeah. And so you chose to go into psychology. This is your third year. Is this your final year?
So I have at least one more year. Depending on how things work out, I might take a fifth year. COVID has kind of messed up everybody's schooling, unfortunately. But I was lucky enough to at least have a year and a half in person. So I am thankful for that. I do feel for the people who had to start out during COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. Is a big part of going to university social for you?
Yeah, I think so. School has always been, I've always loved the idea of learning, loved learning about new things. But I think for me, school has always been where I've been social and where I've been able to like meet people and have a community. So that's certainly what I was looking for when I went to university. Definitely miss that now that class is online. Mm-hmm. Don't really have that like social experience, you're not around people, you're not meeting people. So I definitely miss that.
So what has the COVID period of time been like for you?
Yeah, so I have been online for class, so like over Zoom for a year and a half. Yeah, a year and a half now. Mm-hmm. I've certainly struggled a bit with that, as I know like other students have. It's definitely challenging when you don't have like a set schedule and lectures are just posted and you're trying to do that on your own schedule. I certainly feel less motivated to do the work than I did when I was going in person and, you know, listening to my professor's lecture. So, you know, it's been a learning curve. I've sort of got used to it now, I think, but I certainly miss being in person and having that social aspect.
Yeah. Do you find you have to be very disciplined to do distance learning?
Oh yeah, I think so. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, you take, let's say 4 or 5 courses at a time. And when, you know, everything's sort of due at the same time, you have to like allot the time that you need for different courses on your own. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, can be challenging.
Yeah. So let's switch over to your work background. What kinds of jobs did you have in high school?
I did a co-op with at Parkwood Institute, so the mental health institute here in London, and basically I went and worked in a lab that works called Minds. It's the Mental Health Incubator for Disruptive Solutions. And Minds is the first social innovation lab in Canada who uses social innovation and youth participatory action research, which is all about bringing youth into the research area and youth conducting research. And Minds researches what we call it transition age youth. So 16-year-olds, 25-year-olds who are sort of, you know, aging out of the child and adolescent mental health care system into the adult mental health care system. So in high school, I did a co-op there as a research assistant, so helping out with the research. And then afterwards, I continued on as a paid youth researcher. And that was my first job, and currently still working there. I've worked there for like 3.5 years now. So
what do you research?
Yeah, so specifically, I work on a couple projects. So the first is I help lead a continuation of the Youth Mental Health and Addictions Council of London Middlesex. So we call it YMAC. And so basically that council exists. There's about 12 youth on the council, ranging from 16 to 25, who've had lived experience, you know, either personal or with a loved one or friend with mental health. And those youth consult on a bunch of different programs that serve youth in London who are dealing with mental health challenges. So, you know, for example, they consult on, you know, hospital programs, that youth use for mental health, or, they've also consulted on, stuff like there was a project a while ago that, was a booklet for youth who were transitioning into the adult system. So they do stuff like that. So I co-lead that council. And then as well, I also research what we call a youth-centered practice, which is service providers who are working with youth in the mental health care context. And basically what that means is that they are, you know, like people-centered, youth-centered. They're really taking the opinion of the youth, and the youth are not just like being told this is how you get better, but like really driving their own care journey.
Do you actually work directly with youth, or you're doing sort of the research behind the scenes?
Yeah. So when we're doing research, typically we're interviewing both youth and service providers. So I don't work with youth in like a clinical context. I'm not their therapist, but certainly have had the opportunity to interview many youth about their journeys through the mental health care system. Which I can relate to because I've also had my own journey. So it's very like full circle for me.
Mm-hmm. So what do you like best about your job?
I mean, I think it's just, I feel like what we're doing is like really meaningful. And if like I had known about it when I was younger, I probably would have had a lot like more hope and faith in the mental health care system. And also I'm just like incredibly thankful for the opportunity to like get to learn firsthand how to do research. Like that's a pretty big deal for me being only an undergrad. I'm extremely lucky to have that opportunity.
Yeah. So here you've been taking psychology at university. You're working in mental health. What is your plan going forward? Do you have a thought of that yet, Alec?
Yeah, good question. So there's two paths that I'm currently considering. Before I decided on psychology, I thought about medical school. I actually wanted to be an oncologist because that's my aunt's an oncologist. But so I'm, you know, considering psychiatry. I work for a psychiatrist who's the head of research at Parkwood. So I'm certainly interested in that. But I'm also not opposed to the idea of doing a PhD and doing clinical psychology. And I think there are advantage and disadvantages to both paths, mm-hmm. but definitely somewhere like in mental health.
Yes, absolutely. That's a long road of schooling.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you have to love it. If you're going to be on that road for so long, it's important to really enjoy it and thrive in it and, you know, really get into it because it is such a long path. But
yeah, certainly. I mean, education, I think, has always been very important to me. And it was something that my parents pushed for both my sister and I to do and be involved in and take seriously. And my parents like always said, like, you know, they didn't care what we did as long as we went to university and got educated. So,
yeah. Yeah, well, you're doing that in spades, so good for you. I wanted to switch over now to talking about your journey. And so as I mentioned before, you started out life identified as a female, and you came to realize that you were a male. Can you sort of tell me where that started for you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so I guess like to give some background, some context, I mean, I grew up in the early mid 2000s. So I, as a kid, I don't think I really like had like any trans role models or like even knew what that was. But I, from a very early age, I certainly remember like being uncomfortable in what like I thought was like the prescribed like social female role. Like, you know, I typical things, I didn't like wearing dresses or playing with like typically girly things, but my parents, you know, never really like cared that much about it. Like they let me express myself as how I wanted to. So, you know, I was just me living life. But I think when I, you know, started puberty and adolescence and, you know, you sort of like start to understand like, okay, what is my like gendered role in this world that I live in? I just, you know, I had like a great discomfort in that and I didn't understand that. And I, you know, wasn't really sure like how to vocalize that. But so it really manifested as like, you know, really extreme anxiety, very like socially afraid. You know, I really didn't leave the house or have a lot of friends. You know, I was very reliant on like my parents. You know, I wouldn't order my own food or whatever. And as I got older, like really severe depression.
So what age are we talking about here, Alec?
So I would say probably started around like from like age 7 into like age 13. Oof. Yeah. So, I mean, I was hospitalized for being severely depressed, you know, at like 12, 13. And I think that's like when I started to like sort of explore like, okay, what is my like gender identity? What do I identify as? But I still didn't have the language for that. You know, I mean, it just like wasn't something that I think was like talked about or really like people were like very aware of. Like certainly like trans people have existed forever, but it wasn't something that like, you know, was brought to my attention. And I didn't live in a conservative household or anything. Like, you know, I knew gay people and I at that time identified as a lesbian, but again, I didn't have that language. So I wasn't like comfortable in that identity until I went to high school and there was, you know, trans people in the high school. And all of a sudden I'm sitting there and thinking, you know what, like that might be me. Like that makes sense for me. And so at that time I was like 14. I had been thinking about it for a while. I mean, I had been dressing in like typically masculine clothes for, I mean, since, you know, I was a very little kid. And so eventually I just took that step forward and said, you know what, I think this is who I am and this is how I want to identify. And so I, you know, told my friends and my parents and my family, you know, I want to be, I want to go by Alec and, use he, him pronouns. Mm-hmm. And that was that.
Yeah. Where did you find the most support through your journey?
I mean, my parents and my younger sister and my immediate family have always been, you know, very supportive of me. I've been extremely lucky that, you know, they've always accepted who I am and didn't struggle with that. As well at school, I was very lucky to go to a high school that, had a big gay straight alliance and teachers who are supportive of that. As well as, there were other teachers. So in high school, I was in, the gifted program and there was like a special class for that. And the teacher who ran that class was like very welcoming and made me feel, like okay to come out and say that. She actually was like the first person to ever ask me like, hey, what are your pronouns? How do you identify as? So yeah, I mean, I was very lucky to have numerous adults in my life who were supportive.
One of the things that you mentioned was that being in high school and being part of clubs and social groups really helped you. How did that really help you? You had been a very shy person, obviously, and not well through quite a period of time.
Yeah.
So what was it about that social thing in high school?
I think just like finally being able to live as like, you know, who I was and be open and proud about that, opened me up to like social world. But on the like, I still think I still did have like some anxiety about all that. And what really made the difference for me was like teachers actually being like, hey, Alec, do you want to join this club? Like, my grade 9 English teacher actually asked me to like join the GSA. So that's the Gay Straight Alliance. And I mentioned before the teacher ran the gifted program. She was also in charge of student council. So she asked me to join that. And because, you know, the school was aware that I had, struggled with mental health. I was asked by the school social worker if I wanted to join, what they called the mental wellness committee, who put on like events, every month. To help students de-stress and stuff. And so it was like the act of like these adults who I trusted, like calling me into these clubs that like, you know, made me join. And then through joining, I really just like discovered that I really enjoy being active and doing things. Like I think I've always been a person who has like 100 things on the go at once. And I really enjoy and thrive that way when I have different things to like put my energy into. Mm-hmm. But I just like discovered that like, doing things for like that were like, you know, I wasn't just doing purely for myself, like really like brought me a lot of joy. And when I felt that I was engaged in doing something important and helping other people, I felt better about myself. So yeah. It was like not a selfless thing at all. Like it was very selfish for me to like get that like pure happiness out of helping other people and being involved and feeling like I was a part of a community.
So you were involved in getting the washrooms reassigned. Can you just take me through that story?
Yeah. So when I was so grade 9, grade 10, the school's GSA had a conference of all the students in that, and we're like, okay, like what are some changes we want to see in the school? And it was brought up like, hey, you know, we'd really like to have a gender neutral washroom. And at the time, I think maybe a few high schools in Ontario who had multi-stall gender-neutral washrooms. So what I mean by that is not there had been other schools, because I think there was a law enacted at that time that schools had to have them. But what schools were doing was like giving students who requested it like a key to the teacher's bathroom, which is obviously very othering. Other students are going to know like when you're going to the teacher's bathroom, right? That really like calls you out. This is something we've been discussing in school. And I was like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And really like took that on and championed that. So, you know, we had to write about why it was important to us and talk to, you know, officials at the school board. And I had no experience doing any of this, but I was very passionate about it and was encouraged by the teacher who ran the GSA, Ms. Snooks, to continue meeting with these people and making their quest. And then eventually we were able to get a gender neutral washroom in our school. So, I mean, it's not like the actual physical change was like not a big deal at all. It's just taking the women's sign off the door to the washroom and putting a gender neutral sign on. It was like the policy change that took so long. I think it took like 6 months. And I remember like feeling like it would never happen. And then it finally did, like just being so excited. And like at my time throughout school, like having students, you know, come up to me and be like, you know, I haven't gone to the Washington school like since I've got here. And now I'm like, feel comfortable being able to do that. I was just like, it was very like, I would say comforting and like, just great for me to hear like other stories and be like, oh yeah, there are like other people out there who are like me and who have felt the same way.
So did you get any pushback on this journey?
I mean, a little bit. Like the school board, I think, was a little hesitant. This is something that never like happened before. They were worried, like, is this going to be safe? You know, is this like, you know, possible? But I really like, there wasn't really any like firm, like, no, absolutely, you can't do this. I think for the most part, like everybody, I mean, certainly everybody at the school was supportive, and the school board, you know, came on board. But I didn't experience, any like negative feedback from people in the school community. I think it was like people outside who, you know, maybe didn't even have kids in school who like had such a big problem with like this happening, which is, I mean, you know, people make comments online all the time, but, it was people who I guess didn't really have a say in it. So for me, it didn't matter, but yeah.
Do you feel that even in your time period, which isn't that many years, that there's been a lot of change and evolution?
I think so. I think so for sure. I mean, I grew up with social media. That's always been a part of my life. But I've noticed even, I think, in the last, you know, 5-6 years that there's been more representation in, you know, not only social media but traditional media. Again, as I said, like growing up, I didn't like have the words to express how I was feeling, that I was trans, that that was like a possible for people to be that way. I think we had like Caitlyn Jenner and like a couple other of like high profile like trans people. But certainly not like trans men. I mean, and even now, I think there's like, there should obviously be a lot more representation. But certainly like from when I was, you know, a younger teen and a younger kid to now, I definitely like see the evolution and the hope, and that, you know, there are people who are supportive, and this is like something that's becoming like, I don't know, mainstream, but certainly like something, yeah, people, you know, to say, yeah, well, I know a trans person. So I certainly like have hope for the future.
Yeah. Is hope an important part of this?
I think so. I think you have to have hope. Because there's a lot of things that, you know, aren't always right about the world, and things, injustices that, you know, you're confronted with every day. And if you don't have hope that things will change, that's a very lonely and depressing experience.
So when you take a look at sort of like from a grade, I don't know, let's say grade four on, what were the most challenging moments in there for you in making this transition?
I mean, number one, like finding the language to express like how I felt and who I was, because, you know, as I said, like, I didn't understand, like, why do I feel so uncomfortable in my body? Why do I not identify with all the things that the girls that I'm growing up with, or, you know, the women in my life identify with? And I didn't understand how to express that. I think number two, like, when I did have that language, like, the fear that, like, you know, no one in my life is going to support me, and this is going to, like, destroy, you know, my life, and my family's going to kick me out and not love me anymore. And I don't know why I felt that. Maybe because I, you know, if you like read about trans people in the media, that tends to be the narrative, right? My parents certainly didn't react that way and had never given me like any context that I should think they would react that way. But, you know, that is like what is usually portrayed as the trans story. And number three, I think like having the confidence to be able to say, you know what, this is who I am. It felt, even though it felt right, it still like felt like such a big decision. Like I was so young, I was 14. Like this is something that's going to change the rest of my life. And I really had to like find it within myself to be like, no, you know what, this is who I am. And I'm going to live this way because this is what makes me happy.
What do you think is the most misunderstood thing about trans people?
Oh my gosh, such a big question. I think that people, something I've heard a lot of is like, well, why couldn't you just, you know, live as a lesbian, as a woman who identified as loving other women? Because I think people think that, you know, trans people are just people who are uncomfortable in their, you know, their sexuality, the fact that, you know, and not every trans person, you know, identifies as straight anyways. There are plenty of trans men who identify as liking other men, and plenty of trans women who identify as liking women. So, but I think it's not like it being trans has nothing to do with like who you identify as being attracted to. It's like, you know, I am a guy, like that's just who I am inside.
Yeah. So that's the most misunderstood thing, that somehow it's related to who you're attracted to.
Yeah, I think so.
That's a big part of it. If you were giving advice to your younger self, what would that advice be?
I think the biggest thing would be to just like trust in myself and trust in my ability to be okay and to go on and live life and be happy and do the things that I've done. You know, certainly as a younger person, I don't think I ever imagined myself like graduating high school and going to university.
Now on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being low and 10 being high, when you were in high school, you did a video.
Yeah.
How much courage did it take to do that video on a scale of 1 to 10?
I think it, well, you know what? I think I described it as like, so I was, it was, that was about a year after I came out. I did a documentary about my journey of discovering who I am, about being trans, and I interviewed other trans people, you know, at my school and in the community. So that was the year after I came out. And I think like for that year, maybe about a year and a half, I was on like such a high where I was like finally living who I was, that like, okay, I had all the confidence in the world. So like now I would think a 10, back then it was like nothing for me. It just felt like natural. Like I sometimes wish that, you know, I had remained like on that high, being feeling so good about myself and not caring what other people thought as much. Yeah, so now I would say a 10. Back then I probably would have said a 5. It was really like whatever for me.
Yeah. So are you perfectly comfortable talking to groups of people
About the fact that I'm trans, or just in general?
Okay, in general.
In general, I mean, I wouldn't say that I like enjoy public speaking. I think it's like something that, you know, I still get nervous about or a little anxious about. I still have a, you know, some anxiety that I don't know that I'll ever like grow out of. But I think of it as like a skill, where it's like something that if you practice, you become better at. And I've like taken every opportunity that I've been given to do that. Cause I think it's something I'm going to do professionally, like for the rest of my life. Obviously, you know, in research, you give talks and you give presentations. Mm-hmm. And talking about being trans. Yeah. I mean, I don't actively like hide it. Like it's a part of who I am. I think for a while I didn't really want to like talk about it, and I wanted to just be seen as like, you know, a cisgender, straight, normal guy. But, you know, I wasn't born that way. This is like a big part of who I am, and I don't want to be ashamed of that. So I don't know. I'm pretty comfortable talking about it. Like, you know, I've had to talk about it for the last 6 years. Right.
Mm-hmm. So Alec, If you were speaking with someone who was struggling with their identity, like where should they turn?
I mean, yeah, so I guess that really depends on the individual situation. I mean, I think one of the great things about being a young person today is that you do have access to the internet, and there are like a multitude of resources and people on there that, you know, are great to reach out to, and you can access a lot of stories of people's coming out journeys and just like, you know, general like information about being trans. But I think ideally, you know, everybody, it's very helpful to like have that in person and have someone in your life who you can trust with that information, you know, whether that's a family member, a friend, even a trusted teacher at school. Like, as I said, I was very lucky to have a couple teachers in high school who were really mentors to me, who I was, you know, comfortable bringing this to and who supported me through that journey.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to end off by asking you, two questions. First question would be, what advice do you have for parents of trans kids?
Yeah, so I think, you know, not every parent is going to be educated on this, on what this means for their child. And you know, even my parents, who are the most supportive people in the world, I think had to take some time to process that information. My mom describes it as like she lost a child, but like also, you know, gained. So she lost a daughter, but gained a son, and gained a son who was happy and confident in himself, which she would rather have than a daughter who was sad. Right. So, I think it's probably helpful for parents to look at it that way, that, yeah, I mean, I can understand why it feels like a loss and why it feels scary, but, you know, ultimately I think if this is something that's going to make your child happy, being able to explore that and what that means for your relationship with your child is, you know, it's going to make all the difference in the world to that kid.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay. So final question. I wanted to ask you, what are three things that make you appreciate yourself every single day?
Yeah. So this is a hard one, I think, right? Because we don't tend to talk about that stuff. But, you know, I think I have a pretty good sense of humor about these things. And I've always been able to make people laugh. So I enjoy that. What else? I would say that, you know what, I would say I'm a pretty good listener. I've sort of had to be. And, you know, just that my existence, I can hope that, you know, other young trans people see this and see me as an example of like someone who's been able to, you know, transition and be happy and, you know, somewhat successful in the world. And, you know, if even like one young trans person can see that and be inspired by that and have hope from that, then I'm happy and I feel like I've made a difference.
Here's what I appreciate about you. Because obviously I'm perfectly willing to admit that I have watched you grow up, and
yeah.
I have watched that with a lot of fondness and affection. And here's what I see is a family that loves each other so much, and you have all been there for each other. And that's just been so lovely to see over the years. So that's one of the things that I appreciate. I appreciate that you go for walks with your dog and your dad and have no doubt great conversations. So I appreciate that. And I also wanted to say, Alec, that I appreciate the courage that you've had on your journey, because it's not easy. It's not easy for anyone to try and find themselves, but you had to look a little bit harder to find yourself. And I think that takes courage, and I'm just really proud of you about that. So thank you for chatting with me today.
Well, thanks for having me. I mean, I think it's been a good conversation. I've had a great time.
Yeah, it's been a great conversation. So to our listeners and viewers, thanks so much for joining Alec and me today. It was a great conversation, and I'm so proud of him. So thank you for joining us. Please follow me on wherever you get your podcasts. Watch us on YouTube. And thank you very much for joining us today.